This episode of The Tome Show is brought to you by Noble Knight Games, where Out of Print is available again. And listeners like you, thanks for using The Tome's Amazon store.
Hey, this is R.A. Salvatore, author of the Dritz books, the Demon War books, some Star Wars books, the Crimson Shadow books, way too many books, I think. And you're listening to The Tome Show.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 153. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interview show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, I'm going to grab my twin scimitars, join my dwarven best buddy, and go after a primal being of fire from before time, as we review Gontalgrim by R.A. Salvatore, and I interview the author. That's right, it's time to talk to R.A. Salvatore about his latest Forgotten Realms novel. This is stop one on the official blog tour, supported by Wizards of the Coast, with clues and a scavenger hunt and thousands of dollars in prizes. Check out the website, thetomeshow.com, and you'll find more information there. And if you want to continue the fun on to stop number two on the tour, you can head over to Lords of Tears. So I thought it would be appropriate to bring in Chad Sutton from the podcast to join us for this review. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thank you, Jeff. It's good to be here.
And you've kind of been on the show before once, because I did a podcast episode about D&D podcasts, and I believe we included you in that list.
Yeah, that's great.
So, but this is the first time actually getting to sit down and talk to you live for reals.
Yeah, it's I've been listening to your podcast for quite some time, and I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk with you. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, it should be a good time. So this is the first stop on the blog tour, because this will release early on Sunday, on the 17th of October, 2010. That's the year, right? But you're doing some things with Mr. Salvatore on the same day. Is that right, on the 17th?
Yes. So we'll be interviewing him at 6 p.m. Eastern. Which we'll broadcast live on Ustream as we usually do with our podcasts, and it should be up later that week for download. And we're really excited. I think it's a neat way of going on tour with some of the blogs and really casting a nice wide net and throwing some love back at the fans with some prizes and stuff. So
yeah, I was impressed with the number of prizes that the dollar amount, if nothing else, of prizes they were giving out, the free trip, at least mini expenses paid trip to D&D Experience. That's a huge prize.
Yeah. And it's, I haven't actually, been, to the D&D Experience before. But hopefully, I'll be able to make it out one of these times. I know we have friends of the podcast that often go there, because there's folks in Indiana that listen, so it'll be exciting, and hopefully they'll get a chance to meet R.A. Salvatore again there. I know he was there last time too, so
sure. Yeah, I've never actually been myself. I've had contributors go and do things and come back and bring me audio, but I've never actually made it. Being a teacher, it's hard for me to get out in the middle of the school year and go to cons, so.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But I also want to take a moment, because with the blog tour and the big things going on, we may see some new people coming in and visiting the show for the first time. So I wanted to welcome any new listeners joining us for this special event, and I hope you enjoy it. Maybe you'll want to go check out some of the other episodes of the show. We usually review Dungeons & Dragons game books, novels, as well as giving gaming advice and interview people in and around the industry. So please, look around. Make yourself at home. We usually take some time at the beginning of an episode and talk about some any industry news that's going on. And I think there's a few things that I want to talk about, one of which is particularly relevant to our conversation today, since we are talking about a D&D novel. I wanted to point out that on the D&D website at wizards.com/DND, there is a link to a new survey where they're trying to get some feedback from their fans. And this one is specifically about people's novel reading habits, you know. So head over to wizards.com/DND, or as I like to call it, TSR.com, which still works. Use that link.
I use that all the time too.
It's the only way I ever go to the website is TSR.com. It's so much shorter, and it sends you straight to the D&D page, so you don't have to go through all the wizard stuff. It's great.
Yep.
But anyway, I'll have all that linked on the website, so you head over there and take their survey. It's actually fairly short, and I hope helps keep their interest strong in doing the novels, because I really enjoy reading them, and I only wish I had more time to talk about them here on the episode. But the other news bit I wanted to talk about is about a regular on the show, Quinn Murphy from the At Will blog, has started a Kickstarter project. Kickstarter is one of those things where you can say, hey, I want to make this or build this and sell this, but I want to make sure there's interest in it. And so you can pledge a certain amount of money, and then if they meet their goal, then you get, you know, free stuff, or I guess not free stuff because you gave money for it, right? But you get part of the product, and the product gets made. And this Kickstarter project is for the World Breakers idea. He created this concept of a special kind of solo creature for his website that adds some story and some skill mechanics and some really challenging things to make solo monsters awesome. I also maybe happen to be working a little bit on the content for the project as well, so I might have a vested interest in pointing out that you can get to that as well. And I will put a link in the show notes, so if you want to help support seeing this project come out and seeing this book full of cool new solo monsters and a new mechanic for solo monsters, be sure to check that out and consider supporting the product. All right, that's all the news I got. Do you have anything to add?
Oh no, I'm great.
I think the biggest news in the industry right now is that we're doing a blog tour.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool idea. A little bit less traveling too for RA.
Yeah. As I understand it, he spent a good week or two traveling to and doing signings and appearances and that kind of stuff.
He's
an actual tour before he went and did the virtual one.
Yeah, he's been all over the place. I noticed too. So,
yeah. All right. Well, let's get into what we're all here for. Let's talk about Gontal Grimm. This is the latest novel by R.A. Salvatore about what is clearly the world's most famous dark elf, Drizzt. It is a post-spell plague, and it's post-spell plague by some time. Almost caught up with the timeline of the campaign setting books. So I've got Chad here because he's on the blog tour. He got an early copy, and because I'm on the blog tour, I got an early copy. And so we've both dove into the book as it is. I've finished it, and you've come real close. Is that right?
Yeah, I got about 50 more pages to go.
Okay.
So
now, real quick, so we understand where each of our points of view is coming from. What's your previous experience with Drizzt?
I've read pretty much all of, his earlier work. I don't think that I've read maybe the last, the last series that he did.
Okay.
Being that I'm a father now and a husband, I have a lot less time for reading than I used to, but, mm-hmm. Well acquainted with the characters and the world in and around where all this takes place. So
okay, so you're familiar with the character, although that'll be interesting. If you haven't read the most recent trilogy, there are some fairly major events that involve bringing Drizzt into the current timeline of the Forgotten Realms that you wouldn't be as familiar with anyway.
Especially all the spell plague stuff and those type of things. I haven't actually caught up for all that yet.
Right. And so you also say you're familiar with the setting. Do you read Forgotten Realms novels or other D&D novels?
I've read almost all of RA's work before then. So, I've read a good chunk of his work and his work on Star Wars as well. So,
okay, good. So, I guess we should start off by talking about what Gontalgrim is about. You know, what is Gontalgrim? What's your take on it? What is Gontalgrim about?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a postlude for Boromir. I guess that's how you pronounce it, right? Boromir, the king, the dwarven king.
I would say Bruiner.
Bruiner. He's you know, things took an interesting twist for him. And you know, it's hard to talk about some of this without wanting to give away. You know, I don't want to spoil anything or anything. But you know, his life has taken a new direction. It's a little bit smaller in scope for him and Dritz now, and just in terms of either resources and all that because of what's happened that I'm really not going to say. Right. So that makes it a little bit more interesting. I mean, there's times where, you know, they actually have to, you know, make some coin, yeah. Shall we say, and take some jobs and stuff. So it's, it's kind of more of a throwback to, you know, before he was a king, perhaps, a good on the road buddy adventure. Mm-hmm. For them.
Yeah. And this, so. The story really calls back to an older mention. There was some time ago that they mentioned this ancient dwarven land of Gontalgrim in one of the,
yes,
I don't know what, probably 6 or 7 books ago in the series. And they thought they had found it, and then they did some digging around and found out it was something completely different. But in this one, the previous novel had happened, this timeline I'm a little fuzzy on, but it's pretty close to 60 or 70 years before this book. So
yeah, well, it actually depends on where the beginning of this book, actually time goes very quickly. It may actually start, was it, you know, 20 or 25 years,
yeah,
after that. And then just kind of, hops and skips and jumps, a few decades here, a few decades there.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe 40 years of chunk. Yeah,
it very much felt a little bit like part of the purpose of the book was to bring us from where we were. You know, the spell plug happened in the previous book, so right. take us from there to almost to the timeline, up to the timeline of the Forgotten Realms campaign guide. So we're almost caught up, yeah, with where people are playing in the Forgotten Realms, if they're playing in that setting. And largely most of the companions of the party are gone. They're mostly have died because they're humans, or shorter lived, mm-hmm, or something happened to them in the previous book. Wolfgar ran off back to Icewind Dale, and they kind of ran into him in one of the previous books. But they just sort of decided to leave him alone, so they're assuming at this point that he's probably died of old age.
Yeah, because he'd be 70 at least,
yeah.
I think, in the storyline by the time they pass through, a few more decades here. So
right. So, I mean, we ultimately have just the long-lived members of the party left, which is Bruiner and Drizzt. And Bruiner, mm-hmm, was old when the whole series started way back in the Icewind Dale trilogy. So he's getting up in years for a dwarf.
Yeah, although he's still spry enough to do some battle.
Yeah.
I enjoyed there's a scene where they're fighting a rather large creature that he basically rides to the ground as it topples over after Dritz and he fight it, and I thought that was kind of fun for the old guy to for the old guy to do. He seemed to enjoy that. So
yeah, well, and he becomes even more of a force to be reckoned with towards the end of the book. I mean, to the point that the rest of the party that they're working with sort of look at him with a sense of awe, including Drist, who's seen him do all kinds, you know, who has done incredible things.
Yeah.
So Brunner certainly has his moments to shine in this book. But really what the book's about is that Brunner is at a point where he doesn't want to be the king of Mithril Hall anymore. And so, and I was, I early on when I was reading the book, I'm like, there's a huge spoiler here. Do I reveal it? Do I not reveal it? And I've sort of decided, you know what? It happens in like chapter one. So I'm going to reveal
it. Yeah, it's pretty early. Yeah. It's pretty early on. They go about it in an interesting way. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the twist up and, felt bad for, what's his dwarf pal's name?
Was it
the guy with all the spikes and stuff?
Quint? Is he the one? Tibbledorf Quint.
Yes, yes, yes. The battle rager.
Yeah.
Has some fun parts early on in the book as well. So.
Right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and spoil chapter one here. Basically, we're told there's this elaborate plot and Brunner dies, which you go into the book kind of thinking that was a very possible reality, right? Because pretty much everybody else in the party's died at this point except for Drist. So,
right.
You know, so chapter one, Brunner dies. And then chapter two, you find out that Brunner faked his death so that he could quit being king and go off and be an adventurer again and sort of live his life, you know, finish his life the way he wanted to live his life, you know, full of adventure and out there doing good. And specifically, he wanted to go out and find this ancient dwarven homeland of Gontalgrim.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately...
As well as also look for his, for Caddy Bree,
mm-hmm.
And Regis. If Regis, if it was possible, knowing that they probably, you know, were gone, but there actually were some rumors of some sightings of a beautiful woman and a halfling, guarding some mysterious forest that would appear and disappear or whatever. So
yeah. Yeah, that it gives us a real. That whole part gives us a real sort of iffy story to go along with the original companions here, because because you've got this magical forest that's popping around, and are they dead? Are they not dead? Is there potential that they're going to come back and rejoin Driss later in the stories? I don't know.
Yeah, and then you know, as the book goes on, that kind of gets a little bit farther away, because again, you know, that kind of happens at the beginning of the book, and you know, literally like four decades pass after, you know, that's mentioned.
Right. Although I do have to say, one of the things I feel like this book is doing and doing really well is it's telling its story, and in a lot of ways, I think this book is finishing the story of the previous series. This book felt a lot like it was just a continuation of Ghost King, which was the previous book to me, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think a lot of it is, I guess this is kind of Drist in a nutshell, but struggling against, you know, his kind of dual natures, so to speak, and, you know, constantly remembering those things and also remembering that he's long lived and that he just kind of needs to, you know, I think that he writes, R.A. writes in there somewhere about, you know, that, someone wise told him to live many lives, mm-hmm. you know, throughout his lifetime and that he's going to have to, you know, move on if he's going to make, you know, human friends and stuff. But I think he's still struggling, with that even, you know, 60 years after the, you know, maybe it's even 70 years after the last time that he's, that he saw, you know, his human companion. So.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, they go off on their adventure looking for Gontalgrim. While they're doing that, some other characters we know, Jarlaxle and Athergate, actually find it. Sort of by coincidence. There's some connection going back again to the Pirate King, which was in the Transitions trilogy. And so they find it and accidentally release the energy source that powered this massively magical formerly massively magical kingdom of the dwarves, which happens to be a caged primordial. And from that point on, the book is about getting the right people together to re-cage the primordial.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's very interesting to have, and I think there's actually, he literally writes at one point, look, a dwarf and a dark elf, a dwarf and a dark elf.
Yeah,
it's neat to have those two. They're not exactly opposites, especially these days, and in some ways are, more close together than ever before with Dritz's current mood. Mm-hmm. but nevertheless, kind of foils working on slightly opposite sides of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
I find myself enjoying both of their adventures in the book almost equally well, for totally different reasons.
I don't know what it is, but any of Salvatore's books that have Jarl Axel in it for me is a win.
Yeah, I mean he's such a great character, to have him where he is now compared to where he started out with has been an interesting journey. So.
Yeah.
And some of that I think I missed with some of the books that I haven't actually read. So I was a little surprised, but then, not totally. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Mostly Jarl Axel, if you wanted to sort of see his transition to where he is in this book, just go back one previous book to Ghost King, which in my opinion is the best of that trilogy anyway.
Yeah.
And that book, I think, brings you up to date with most of the story elements you need to know, with a few exceptions about what's going on in Luskin, because of what happened in Pirate King. That's basically the story. But I think one of the things that's happening is not only is he wrapping up some themes and some stories from the previous, arc of every Driss novel that's come out, because I think he sort of wraps up this whole chapter of Driss' life in this book. But I also feel like he's laying a lot of groundwork for future stories. We're introduced to some new characters and some connections those new characters have, and Thay's involved, and the Shade Enclave is involved, and you've got this villain, Hezgro Allegni, who is always referred to in his full name. Everybody gets a shortened name except this tiefling, who always has his full name mentioned. I never quite could figure out why it was so important for him to have a full name every single time he was mentioned.
I really liked the way that he introduced some of these new characters, at the beginning of the book, especially, where he just kind of flipped back and forth through time and through some scenes, mm-hmm. Really well, with, the new elf, evil, woman, I'm just terrible at names.
Dahlia.
Valia. And she's right on the cover, fighting Dritz.
Mm-hmm.
So it was neat to see how those characters were, related, and
are characters that don't really, their story clearly does not conclude in this book. I mean, this is clearly him laying the groundwork for the next series, upcoming books. And so Allegni is one of those characters that some of the things he does plays into some of the things we see in this book, but really his story has not been told at all yet. We're going to see a lot more from him.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
All right, so let's wrap up our thoughts here. All in all, what do you think about the book? Good, bad?
Good. I'm biased. I'm a huge fan. I've liked everything that he's done. I like the fast pacing. A lot of scenes cut back and forth and mixed in with each other. That help tell the story well. He doesn't dwell on anything, really, for too long of a time. So like I said, you know, it's fast paced. It's not like the old adventures, and it's not, you know, but there's enough tie back and enough throwbacks to, you know, kind of make the transition. And I think, you know, like you mentioned, probably that's, you know, what this is all about is, you know, kind of getting us into, you know, where D&D is today. And I'm really excited to see how this plays in with, you know, some of the other projects, because this is, you know, tying in across a bunch of stuff from what I'm hearing, including a video game that'll be released sometime in the next year. I'm not exactly sure when. The new Neverwinter Nights game in the series of ones that have been released before. So
yeah,
I'm excited.
And a new source book. There's a new Neverwinter source book coming out.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I'm excited. This is good stuff.
Yeah. I also all in all, I think this is one of the best Salvatore books I've ever read. I really enjoyed Ghost King, and I think this, in many ways, is even better than Ghost King was. And putting the two of them together tells a complete sort of story of Drizzt and what happens to his companions, that I think is just really fantastic. This book is a romp and a lot of fun. And in a lot of ways, one of the reasons I loved it is that it calls back to not the stories of the early days of the companions, but it really sort of felt like it could have been one of those early adventures. You know, it's exploration, it's dungeon crawling, it's fighting huge monsters, it's lots of fighting. It worried less about politics and moralistic things, although there was plenty of that going on. But it didn't get bogged down in it, like I think some of the novels in previous trilogies have. And it really just gets back to the core of what has been fun about these books from the beginning.
I totally agree.
I think he's even gotten better at some of the things that as an author that used to be a little more difficult. You know, he's always been known as somebody who goes into a lot of detail describing action, but sometimes almost too much. You know, he gets so detailed, and it's like there's no way I can follow what's going on. It's, you know, it feels more like he's scripting, you know, move for move what should be happening in a movie. But in this one, he does a really nice job of keeping that a little more succinct and easy to understand. And part of how he does that is he might only have an action scene for 3 or 4 paragraphs, and then he jumps to another character fighting in the same scene. So he's not describing every character, you know, within the same chapter. He's jumping around and saying, okay, Drizzt fights for a few minutes and this is what happens to him, and Brunner fights for a few minutes and this is what happens to him, and Jarl Axel's over here doing this thing, and so they jump around. Mm-hmm. And so you don't get really bogged down in the action of one character. And so the areas where he's traditionally a little bit shaky for me was good, and everything else was fantastic. I really, really like this book. Probably my favorite, my new favorite Drizzt book of all time.
Yeah, and you know, if you've never read any of the old stuff, you know, this might be a good place to jump in, you know, and start reading again, because there's enough in here for me to even catch up on some of the things that I missed, more or less. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you haven't read any of them for a while, I still recommend it, because you know, I really enjoyed it, and I like, you know, exactly what you're saying about the kind of the fast cut scenes. This is like, you know, a movie that you see where you're like, wow, you know, the editing,
yeah,
the editing of this was great, you know, where the you know, it's cause it's all about the pacing and, you know, not spending too much time on one, you know, one specific facet before he's over. And I think there's actually one fight scene where he does that within the same exact fight scene, but you know, with both different characters, and it was very short. And then, you know, just when you thought, oh, wow, this could be really cool, he's like, nope, you're going to have to wait for it. Do you remember what scene I'm talking about? Where it just kind of, he just kind of ends the battle with them walking away saying next time.
Yeah.
With some of the newer characters. And I just like, oh, you know, he's making me wait for it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some good tactical writing and some excellent editing in how he merges those scenes together. So yeah, very, very good. It's a fast read.
All in all, yeah, fast read, and I think one of the best put together books that Salvatore's done. So I think everybody should run out and pick it up right now. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and take it right over to our sponsor for the episode, Noble Knight Games. Noble Knight is a brick and mortar store which buys up your unwanted game books and then finds a new home for them from somebody who will love them just right. So if you're looking for something new or something long out of print, go to Noble Knight Games and tell them that the Vorpal Network sent you. And my pick of the episode is Ghost King, the paperback, available for under $7 from Noble Knight, so you can go and find out how we got to where we are in Gontalgrim, and enjoy probably my second favorite Drizzt novel of all time, second only to Gontalgrim itself. Find it all at Noble Knight Games.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. Huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com. Or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
I am here with R.A. Salvatore, author of the Demon Wars books, the Cleric Quintet, soon-to-be-coming video games from 38 Studios, and, of course, all things Drizzt. Welcome to the show, Mr. Salvatore.
Hey, it's good to be here.
And it's pronounced Salvatore, not Salvatore?
Yeah, except when I'm in Italy.
Okay. Yeah.
I found out that when I go to Italy, if I say Salvatore, they slap me.
Well, good. That settles a bet I had with somebody when I was in middle school.
I hope you won.
I did.
Good.
All right. So we're here specifically today to talk about your new book called Gontalgrim, which by the time this actually hits the internet will have just come out. This is scheduled to release along with the blog tour that you'll be doing. Personally, I'm about halfway through reading it, so this is a chance for me to sort of see where I'm going to go and get a sneak peek as to what's going to happen before I turn the pages, maybe. So let's start with some of
Probably not. Go ahead.
We'll see what happens. Let's start with the basics. What's Gontalgrim? What's the story all about?
Gontalgrim is the legendary ancient homeland of the Delzoon Dwarves. And the Delzoon Dwarves and Skaten Realms basically encompass most of the Dwarven clans of the Northern Realms. And Brunner, King Brunner, Drizzt's friend, has been searching for it for a while. He's kind of made it his new reason for living because he's quite old now and bored with being the king. And Gontalgrim will take on a much more added significance in the story with regards to other areas in the region where it's located.
Right, and Gontalgrim was a concept that you first sort of started touching on as a location. I believe it was back in the trilogy that established the Kingdom of Many Arrows, is that right?
Yeah, it's been around in the realms for a long time. And there have actually been several different interpretations of it, which gets kind of tricky. Like many things in the realms, the things that are off to the side mm-hmm. get mentioned in lots of places that nobody remembers as the years and decades pass. But I had to get some help from them, from the people up at Wizards, on exactly where we wanted to go with it.
Yeah, I was actually a little surprised because as I recalled, in my memory, when it was first mentioned, Brunner and the gang had sort of run into an area that he thought was, you know, a possible entrance to Gontalgrim. And my recollection was that it was much further west than it ends up being in this book. Is my memory serving correctly?
Well, actually, this book is much further west than where Brunner was.
Oh, yeah.
Is out by Mithril Hall, and right. Yes, the Gontalgrim winds up being much further west than that.
Right. Yeah. But of course, I suppose you can justify that kind of thing not as inconsistencies, but as it's so old, nobody had any idea where it was.
Well, that's the whole point. I mean, it was never really clearly defined. Nobody, if people knew where it was, they would have found it. I think an ancient dwarven major kingdom would be a place most people would, you know, adventurers would look for fat loot and stuff. You know, right. I'd go there.
Sure.
But when Brunner found was not Gontalgrim, in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't think it's one of the things that Gonsil Grimm, searching for Gonsil Grimm in the realms would be akin to searching for Arthur's castle in England.
Okay.
You know, if I can use that analogy. Is it a Tintagel? Is it in Wales? Is it in Scotland? Where is it? And I think that's, if you think of it along those lines, there are probably a thousand different theories of where it was or if it even existed at all. And because of that, you have great latitude as a writer, as long as, the rest of the team working on the world is okay with it to put it where you want it.
Yeah, and in fact, I think you could probably argue it's even harder to find than King Arthur's castle because England is relatively small compared to the realms.
Right, and the dwarves would have magic maybe protecting it.
Right, especially given some of the connections we find out about Gonsil Grimm about a third of the way into the book.
Right.
Some of their magical connections. So a lot of your...
I'm always looking for those connections. That's something I always try to do in the books is find the connecting lines of power and intrigue and magic and, even though it's a big world, substantial magic has long fingers, so to speak. So I'm always looking for those types of connections in my books.
Well, and that kind of connection I think played off pretty well here because it ties into the Pirate King book pretty closely,
right.
This book does, which was a nice surprise to me because Pirate King felt like a book that sort of stood on its own and didn't necessarily tie to the rest of that trilogy as much as some other trilogies do. But then it all sort of comes back and become, there's little nods to it and homages to it all throughout this book that I found to be really sort of flesh the whole thing out in a new light.
Yeah, I'm glad you noticed that because that was part of my hope with the whole transition series. I mean, Transitions was it was called Transitions for a reason. I mean, Pirate King was basically showing some of the changes that are going on in the realms. The Orc King showed some of the changes that are going on in the realms, and the Ghost King showed some of the changes that are going on in the realms. But all three of them showed the changes that were going on with the companions of the Hall, mm-hmm. with Dritz and his friends, and what these changes were going to mean for them. And not all of it, of course, was very pleasant. So, even... I didn't necessarily write The Pirate King with the idea that, I'm going to write this book called Gonsil Grimm and I'm going to be able to bring these things back in. But all of the things I create, whether it's in Callumport or The Spirit Soaring or Mithril Hall or Icewind Dale, those things stay with me. And as I write subsequent novels, if I can draw on a lot of those adventures, I find it ties the whole thing together quite nicely. So I enjoy doing that. I mean, I don't necessarily write, like I said, I don't necessarily write a book like The Pirate King thinking I'm going to write a book called Gonsil Grimm in a few years. And when I write that book, I'll be able to draw on this. But when I write Gonsil Grimm, I certainly am thinking back to the three books of Transitions and before that. And what I might be able to draw from those to make the story in this book a little stronger.
Mm-hmm. So the last several books that you've written have been pretty strong thematic stories. For example, we were just talking about Pirate King, which has some themes that directly tie very clearly into recent events. And Ghost King has some pretty strong themes about the concept of transitioning and how Driz's life is going to play out. What kind of themes can people look for and expect to see in this book? Are we looking for more sort of things influenced by real life, things influenced by current events?
I think this book is really the last book of Transitions and the first book of the new series. And really, I think what this book does is it takes the whole Driz story full circle to, I hope, an interesting reset point, if you will. I don't want to really use the word reset. Let me rephrase that. It brings Driz closure. It offers Driz the freedom from his past, because that's part of closure. But it doesn't do so without a lot of more pain that is yet to be experienced. This one is even though it's a wild story, you know, the kind of rollicking adventure that I have fun with, I think it's a lot like, I don't know, the Crystal Shard in that manner, where it's kind of a lot of different moving parts coming together for this wild, crazy ride. Even though it has that, and it has larger implications on the realms. It's the first book of the Neverwinter series for a reason. It has larger implications on the realms, which is what I was asked to do. It's very much a personal, the Dritz personal journey going forward and putting him in a new place, because the whole point of transitions and the whole point of, you know, where I'm going next with Dritz is to kind of put him in a place where he's willing to accept something new because he has no choice.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, I guess, as I started reading through this book, it really felt to me like this was part of the story that was being told in Transitions, because Transitions, sort of the first two books sort of explain why the change is happening. The third book has that change happening, and then this book really sort of shows, you know, what happens after the big change, you know, as time passes and Drizzt continues living his long-lived life and other people move along, so to speak.
Exactly. And it is much a part of, you know, you have to understand something. The Wizards of the Coast is putting everything into trilogies and breaking up the Dritz series to make it manageable for the reader. Mm-hmm. I haven't treated the Dark Elf books, the Dritz books, or any of my Forgotten Realms books in terms of series since the Cleric Quintet. The Cleric Quintet was really the last series I wrote. What I'm writing is a road of adventure. I'm following these characters, particularly this Dark Elf, down a road of adventure. And I'm just letting them tell me what's next. It's the next logical sequence in their lives. In a way, I've actually said the Dritz has become almost a personal journey to me. And what I mean by that is he's changed as I've changed. When I started writing this series, I was in my late 20s. Now I'm in my early 50s. And I'm still writing these guys. Well, obviously my viewpoint on the world has changed. My viewpoint about life, the meaning of life, the point of it all has changed. As anyone's will, as you get older. I've experienced loss, I've experienced love, I've experienced a lot of different things quite keenly. You know, I'm a grandfather now. It gives you an entirely different perspective on the world. And Dritz is kind of my, how do I put this? His adventures are a personal journey for him, but it's my personal journey that I'm going on in a lot of ways. Not that I'm Dritz. It's just as I change his perspective on the world, as he sees things going on around him, it's been a long enough time that I've changed. And I've come to see the world a little differently as well. So I find it interesting. I don't think I really realized I was even doing that until very, very recently. These books mean a lot to me for very personal reasons.
Okay, good. And so you've mentioned a bit ago about how a lot of the things in this book are going back to some old familiar things. And in a lot of ways, it's sort of classic D&D, right? It's exploration, it's dungeon crawls with a party, finding old ruins, and all these kinds of things that sort of, in many ways, tie back to some of the stories you told early on in the Drizzt sort of saga. Right. But it's a whole different crew of people. Is part of what's going on here that you're maybe replacing is not the right word, but you get the idea of we no longer have the iconic characters. We don't have, you know, Wolfgar and Caterbury and Regis and what have you. So are we slowly starting the process of building a new party, a new cast of characters that Drizzt is going to be working with? Or is he just going to become more solitary over time?
If you think about your own life, right? Think about friends who move away, and you say you'll keep in touch. And maybe you do, but it's a distant touch. And you'll find new friends. This is life. And it's amazing if you look back at people, say, who moved away from your life 5 years ago, or people you lost 5 years ago, even. Even though you still care, even though you still, you know, maybe I should call so-and-so, or, geez, I missed Dad. They're gone. Your life has moved on. Now we're talking about Dritz, and we're talking decades, not years, have passed. Mm-hmm. And his life has room. And circumstance will put him in touch with new people. So the other thing about the way you view the world, I really believe that, you know, you always hear about the kid who's in with the wrong crowd, right?
Mm-hmm.
You hear that all the time. It's a classic cliche. It's cliche because it's, you know, there's truth in it.
Mm-hmm.
The people with whom you surround yourself have an impact on how you view the world, on how you react to situations, and on who you will become. That's the truth. And Dritz has gone a lot of years. He's had a lot of character development. One of the things I can do now is put him in situations where he's surrounded by different people, different types of people. You know, we meet a new friend, if you will, maybe friend, maybe not, who's, you can't compare her to Caddy Bree, certainly. There's no comparison.
No.
Night and day difference. That's how, if you remember back to the Lone Drow when Dritz was with an Ovindil, she was telling him that the way an elf survives the 800 years and keeps his or her sanity is to live his or her life in shorter bursts, in human length bursts. You know, so you have to let go and you have to start over. You have to let go and you have to start over. And that's exactly what I'm putting Dritz through now. But he's going to be starting over with different people. So replace isn't the right word. I'm not going to add in a halfling rogue who was kind of the reluctant adventurer. I'm not going to add in the new pure of heart Caddy Bree. I'm not going to add in the new barbarian to replace the characters that aren't there anymore. But he is going to replace them, or not replace them so much as find new companions to be with. And those companions are going to be different, and they are very different. That's a fun way for me to explore parts of Dritz that maybe he didn't even know about.
Yeah, in fact, you mentioned, you know, in our own lives how, you know, we move away or other people move away. We're not as close friends with them, but we find other friends. And then you also mentioned about somebody falling in with the wrong crowd. And that sort of rings true to what I've seen so far, right? Because Drist is losing touch with the old iconic characters for whatever reason. And this new crowd certainly isn't they might be his new companions, but they're certainly not likely, at least from what I see, they're not likely to be the close friends that he had before.
Ah, but they offer other things, and they're very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a lot of fun.
Part
of being a writer is creating characters you love and then beating the ever-loving tar out of them.
Absolutely. And I think, it honestly, looking at this group of companions, it begs the question a little bit of, who's the villain in this story?
Yeah, isn't that an interesting one?
You know, I had some.
I'm not answering that.
Okay, yeah. I had some basic assumptions from the cover of who the villain of the story was. And the more I get into the book, I'm starting to think, well, she's clearly not a nice person and clearly has different motivations, but I don't know that she's ultimately going to be the villain. But maybe she is.
Yeah, cover art's done for different effects. I wouldn't read too much into that.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah. I know.
Keep in mind that I usually see the cover of a book when the book comes out.
Sure, sure. Well, but at the same time,
also keep in mind that artists typically don't read the books. They don't have time to read the books between. And I love Lockwood's work. I mean, Todd's been one of the best things that's happened in my career.
Sure.
He's a fantastic artist. The cover is dramatic, and it's got this wonderful affect to it. But I wouldn't read too much into it. It's there is a real joy in finding companions for Dritz who will force him in other directions or force him to maybe question some of the things he thought were so rock solid in the foundation of his being. You know, it is a lot of fun to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I had a blast writing this book, in case you can't tell.
Oh yeah.
And I'm halfway through the next one and having even more fun.
Yeah. And it comes through in the pages. I'm having a blast reading it. You know, I'm enjoying the romp as much, if not more, than I have in a lot of books I've read lately.
Well, it's a romp. There's no doubt about it. It's a romp.
Absolutely. But I mean, ultimately, I think you can make the argument that all of these people are villains in their own rights, or at least at some point they have been.
Sure.
You know, they're not good people necessarily, but maybe it's because they've made hard choices.
But you know, if you want to take that attitude, however, I'd argue with you that Dritz's father was not a good person.
I think that's fair.
I mean, he relished killing people, but why? And one of the things I tried to do in the Dark Elf books is stay away from the black and white, if you will, hero villain. Sure, you can make the case that Dritz is very paladin-like. He really fights to do that which is right in his heart all the time. You know, I've often said that Dritz is who I wish I had the courage to be, because he's always trying to do that. He's trying to do what's right, all to a fault, and I mean that literally, to a fault, because there are times when his nobility, if you will, his sense of nobility, which is almost caused by a scar because of where he grew up. Okay, it's that scar that he just rebels against psychologically, if you will, all the time. And he has this overblown sense of nobility to a fault.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he makes vow that I will never kill another drow. Well, that's a silly vow to make in a world that's rife with war, often against dark elves trying to kill your best friends. He makes mistakes because of that, but he tries to hold true to his principles. It's pretty admirable. But one of the things, if you read the books, is in Trary, I mean, he's a villain. He's obviously a villain. Mm-hmm. He's an assassin. However, can you not sympathize just a little bit with someone growing up the way he had to grow up, where it was kill or be killed? Isn't the same true of Jarl Axel? Wasn't the same true of Drith's father? One of the things about the Forgotten Realms is it's an incredibly violent world. There are monsters around every corner, in every shadow. It's even worse now with the return of the Netherese, you know, the Netherreal Empire. It's even worse. In such a violent world, is there any reason you wouldn't expect to see a self-serving Jarl Axel or an Intrary? And one of the things I've tried to do in these books from the very beginning is explain the villains. You know, there's a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want villains to just get up every morning and say, I think I'll do evil today.
Right.
I try to do that in all my books. In the Demon Wars series, you know, probably my favorite villain that I've written of all time is Marcalo Dionero, the monk in Demon Wars. And I love Dionero because he's just so totally wrong, but thinks he's so completely right. He is convinced that he is doing absolutely the most righteous thing, and he's a complete scumbag. I love writing the guy,
mm-hmm.
because I can't believe that there are very many people in the world who wake up and think, I'll do evil today. So that's why I try to bring that through in the books, and mm-hmm. The Forgotten Realms is the perfect environment for it.
Absolutely. So now a lot of the characters you mentioned, while certainly evil in our interpretation of them, you know, your Artemis and Churis, and to your argument, even Zachnephine and Jarl Axel. At the same time, you've made it a point to show some of their redeeming qualities. And some of them, you know, in the end, at least made the effort to redeem themselves in some way, shape, or form. Is that story of redemption something we're going to see with some of the new characters as well?
I don't know that I've redeemed them. I don't know that Entreri. I think Entreri did find some redemption at the end of The Road of the Patriarch. Mm-hmm. When Entreri looked at the priest at the end of Road of the Patriarch after they just razed the temple, and he said, go ahead and build another church, but if you act like your predecessors, I'm going to come back here, I'm going to burn it down again, and this time you're going to be in it. So I think for Entreri, that was a form of redemption, but I really think the probably the most important scene in the entire Dritz saga, and including the Cell Swords and the Cleric Quintet, I think of all my Forgotten Realms books as one. I don't break them up, as one long story. Mm-hmm. But in the book Promise of the Witch King, Adamus Entreri gets captured by Gareth Dragonsbane, this paladin king of Damara, and he's in the dungeon. There's one scene in that book when Gareth Dragonsbane goes down to Entreri's cell, and Entreri looks at him and says, you hate me because you're afraid you're just like me. And Entreri basically calls him out and says, just because you make it legal for you to do what you do doesn't mean the kids who are stomped under the boots of your army are any less dead than anyone I put my dagger into. And he really shakes Gareth. And there's so much truth to that. There's truth to that in the world as we see it today. There's truth to that throughout the history of humankind. Les Miserables was all about that. Mm-hmm. The first novels, the Iliad, the Odyssey, the Aeneid, they're all about that. I mean, who's the hero? The hero is the guy trying to knock down and destroy this town because he's got the hots for a woman in it. That makes a person a hero? But that's one of the conundrums of the world. That's one of the things that human beings constantly struggle with. I was listening to Richard Dawkins one day talking about the Bible, and he said, look at the story of Jericho. We hold Joshua up as a hero. In the Bible, Joshua's a hero. But if you read the story in the Bible, never mind what really happened, because we don't know what happened. If you read the story in the Bible, he knocked down the walls of Jericho, and his army went in and slaughtered every man, woman, child, and animal within the city. And we're holding him up as a hero. And how do you reconcile that? How does anybody reconcile that? Where's the beginning and end of this snake that seems to be eating its tail? These are questions that permeate human history, human literature, everything about us, who we are. And just because I'm writing fantasy books and writing about elves and dwarves and orcs and doesn't mean that I don't want to ask those same questions. Even though I don't have any answers to them, they're worth asking and trying to figure out. So I do that with characters like Entreri. And when Entreri had Gareth Dragonsbane down in that dungeon, and he said to him, you're afraid of me, you hate me because you're afraid you are me, that was something that really stung this paladin king to the core of everything he believed in, because he knew there was truth in it. So you're talking about, will there be redemption for the characters? Jarl Axel has always been a character that's redeemed himself. Mm-hmm. Over and over again. I mean, I don't think he's really an evil person. I think Entreri got a bit of redemption in Road of the Patriarch in his own sordid way. Mm-hmm. In this book, the new characters, I don't know where they're going to go, those that make it through the book. I mean, I don't know where they're going to go. And the reason I say that is because I write books the way you read books. I always have this grand plan, and when I look at the final product and then look at my original outline, I'm nowhere near it. Because I don't know what I'm writing on the next page most of the time, let alone plotting out this overarching story about exactly what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it fun for me.
Yeah, right now, I mean, the Thayan characters, there's a few of them, certainly don't seem like their motivations are necessarily relatable to those of us, with a soul or a conscience or whatever you want to call it, right? But the female, Dahlia, who we've referred to a few times now.
I adore that character, by the way.
Yeah, we're getting some of her background that does make us feel like, oh, we kind of start to understand why she is the way she is, in the same way that we started to understand and sympathize with Intrieri, I think.
She's really complicated.
Right.
And really wounded. And really, really dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I love this character.
Yeah.
I'm having so much fun with this character. I can't tell you.
So sometimes you write characters and they show up in a book and then they just keep showing up and start becoming almost new companions. You know, they keep recurring so often that they're a major part of the story. Can we expect
sure.
some of the new characters in this book to become, you know, the next 10 books, they're going to be some of the main characters now?
Oh, if every book they live through. You know, if they live, I've one of the things that's happened, I think, is I'm getting more Karen-like in my old age here. I tend to be knocking people off a lot.
Although you did that early on, too, and then just brought them back.
Well, I mean, Bruno never died. One of the things that you try to do is you have to have the moments where people get on the edge of their seats. And I did do that a lot. And that's part of the fun of fantasy. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, Tolkien did it too, right? Gandalf fell with the Balrog, right? And this is what we do. It's put you on the edge of your seat. And then when you finally really do tip over the seat, people don't believe it. But, you know, I mean, I love it when people say to me, you never kill any characters. Well, they don't say that anymore.
Right.
But up to a couple of years ago, a lot of the Dritz readers would come up to me and say, you never really kill any characters. And I say, well, have you read Demon Wars? No. I said, but then don't make that statement to me.
Right.
And I'll give you a hint when you're reading Demon Wars. Don't get too attached to anybody. Because most of them aren't getting out of that series.
Although I think you could make the at this point now with the big jump forward, you know, having gone forward several decades, that starts to be true of the Driss saga as well.
Well, there are inevitable, you know.
I mean,
it's not my sandbox. It's Wizards of the Coast sandbox, and they decided to advance the world, and their advancement of the world had severe implications on the continuing stories of many authors. And so, you know, that leaves us with a choice. Do we still play in the sandbox or do we go elsewhere? And for me, I love the realms. I hope I'm writing in the realms until I'm done writing, and I probably won't be done writing until they close the lid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to keep playing in the sandbox. But, yeah, I mean, it means that you have to do some things that, and, you know, maybe it's time.
Well,
it's time. I mean, I had a blast writing this book, and part of the reason I had a blast writing this book is because I was able to bring new characters into Drift's circle, and that meant something.
Yeah,
and it allowed me to do things with Drift that I just haven't been able to do for a while.
Yeah, it does seem to re-energize a new or a different type of storytelling that hasn't been quite as possible in the more recent books.
And I admit that. I absolutely admit that.
Yeah.
The fact that I had the same group of characters who, you know, who take up an awful lot of ink. I mean, let's face it, when you've got five major heroes and known major villains, you're eating up a lot of the story with characters that people know so well that it's hard to surprise them. It's hard to, you know, bring about any dramatic changes in those characters after a while. When you've been with a character for 22 years, it's 22 years now since the first Dritz book came out. And so we've known Caddy Bree and Brunner and Regis and Wolfgar and Dritz for 22 years, the people that have been with me from the beginning. When you've got these characters that have been around for that long, what do? How do you can't, like, snap your fingers and create these massive character changes in that group. You can, because people don't change like that. People don't change overnight unless they have an outside force, like an injury or a real trauma, to force some kind of change upon them. And if the characters aren't changing, yeah, it can get hard to write. It can get a little stagnant. I admit that. And at the same time, I feel pretty proud of the fact that I was able to run this series for 22 years. And I had a lot of people writing me truly upset, their hearts broken, their tears in their eyes about the Ghost King. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud of that mm-hmm. because that means I did something in those 22 years worth doing. And I created friends and companions for a lot of people. But the world moves on. And loss is part of life. And how you deal with loss is one of the defining characteristics of who you are and who you're going to be. So here we go. Transitions is over.
Yep. And I've noticed in the last couple of books of with the end of Transitions and then into this book, Jarl Axel, who we've talked about before, seems to be showing up more and more. And I think arguably Jarl Axel gets more screen time these days than Dritz does. Is that something that's just sort of it's happened recently, happening now, or is it something that it's a character you like and he's going to be a continuing trend?
There's a lot, all of that, but the other thing is that here's a character who is probably the most adaptable character. If you look at Jarl Axel's past and how mm-hmm. he's gotten through his life and mm-hmm. and what he's accomplished. He's a chameleon. He can be a million different things, from a leader of a mercenary band to handing it over to Camariel and going on the road with Intrieri. He's a chameleon. He's long-lived. He's a drow, so the jump in the realms didn't necessarily affect him. His character I love. The readers love him. He started off as a walking deus ex machina. I mean, the whole point of Jarl Axel was kind of a joke, where no matter what situation they were in, he had a Batman utility belt and some device to fix it, right? Mm-hmm. That was the whole beauty of Jarl Axel. But he's gone way beyond that now. He's become much, much more than that. He's always had an affinity for Dritz. He's shown that from the very beginning. He's told Dritz flat out that he and Zach Nafane were friends. Someday I'm going to write that book. Mm-hmm. Going way back in the past with Jarl Axel and Zach Nafane together in their youth. He's adaptable. He's clever. He would view the coming of the Netherese and the joining of worlds and the shadows and the chaos as opportunity. While other people are cowering in their homes and surrounding themselves with extra guards, Jarl Axel would be like, there is something good to be made out of this, and having fun with it all, because that's who he is. So the changes in the realms really favor a character like that. I love the character. And he's not an enemy of Dritz, and he's never pretended to be. Mm-hmm. And Dritz knows that. If you read some of the diary entries in the Sellswords books, when Dritz is talking about Intrieri and Jarl Axel together, he talks about how Jarl Axel might be someone who can actually redeem Intrieri. So Dritz has always had an affinity for him. And what happens at the end of the Ghost King? Who's the first person Dritz goes to when his world comes crashing down mm-hmm. to try and help him bring it back up? It's Jarl Axel. There's a reason for that. And it's not a concocted reason that I came up with for convenience. It's something that's been, the seeds of which have been laid since we first met Jarl Axel. It makes sense.
He's certainly one of the most fantastically gray area sort of characters I've ever read.
And that's exactly what he's supposed to be, so thank you.
Yeah, good. So I've taken up quite a bit of your time here. Just, do you have any last things you want people to know about going into Gontalgrim?
Hold on to your hats, because I'm having fun. And when I'm having fun... I never know what's going to pop up when I'm hitting the keys.
All right. Good enough. Thank you very much, sir.
No, thanks. Great interview. I had a lot of fun.
All right. Well, that is episode 153. We said Gontalgrim was a really good story. Does that sound right?
It is. I totally recommend it.
Cool. Well, I want to thank R.A. Salvatore, I want to thank Sarah Easterly and the WotC Novel Department for helping make this episode possible, and I definitely want to thank Chad Sutton from Lords of Tear for joining me. Can you tell people a little bit about what Lords of Tyr is, where they can find it, all that kind of good stuff?
Sure. The Lords of Tyr is a gaming group. We've been gaming together for since about 2003, so 9 years now, I think, almost, since 2002. And we thought it'd be fun to just start, you know, doing some blogging and podcasting along the way, and we've been having a lot of fun. We play twice a month, and we blog twice a month. And you can find us at lordsoftyr.com, lordsoftyr.com. We'll have Ari on his next section of the blog tour on Sunday the
17th.
What day is that? The 17th at 6 p.m. Eastern.
It's the same day that people are hearing this episode if they're listening to it the day it came out. So
yeah, so head on over and
go check it out tonight.
Excellent, and thanks, Jeff. We'll have to have you on our podcast sometime too. That'd be awesome.
I'd love to come on anytime. So that's where people can find you. People can email me at thetomeshow@gmail.com. Visit the forums, which we're sharing with Gamers Haven over at gamershavenpodcast.com. And make sure you call the Tomes Biz line at 919-BIZTOME. That's 919-BIZ-TOME. With your thoughts, questions, comments for any upcoming episodes that we have, including things like discussion about advice questions or topics that you want us to discuss. Essentials. We've just released an episode about essentials, and we're going to continue talking about those in the future. And the master plan software. We got an episode coming out about that very shortly. You can also help the show out by reviewing it on iTunes or telling people about it. That helps the audience grow. And don't forget to consider checking out the Tomes Amazon store for products discussed on the show and more. That helps us pay our bills. Links for things mentioned in the show can be found in the show notes on the website at thetomeshow.com. This has been episode 153, wherein I have gathered together my unusual party of adventurers, including Chad Sutton, the stalwart dwarven companion, myself, a hot young elven warrior with a killer stick, and R.A. Salvatore. I'm not sure who he is in this story, but I'm pretty sure he's a dark elf. And we all came together to make this episode Gontalgrim of
The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome.
I'm on the wall.